Hi, welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm your host, Owen Benjamin. Before we get started, quick shout out to our sponsor, Blue Apron. I just actually ate a Blue Apron meal like 5 minutes ago. That Amy's obsessed with Blue Apron. We get the meals delivered to our door. She cooks them up. Walter has the tiny bits of it. We just had pasta with radishes and lettuce and kale. It tells you exactly what to do. It's insane. It's great for moms. It's great for dads. It's great for little babies. It's great for single people who want to learn how to cook and impress somebody. It's the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. And I looked at my analytics recently. I've never done that before. And it's hilarious how many listeners I have outside of the country. So by the country, I'm going to specify that's the United States. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. It's awesome. Cooking together builds strong family bonds. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. Those who spend a lot at restaurants or high-end grocery chains can now spend under $10 per person for a delicious meal. Cashew chicken stir fry with mandarins and jasmine rice, roasted pork with apple, walnut. I mean, udon noodle soup with miso, soft-boiled eggs. It's insane. Not all ingredients are created equal. Sorry, it's a fact. Fresh, high-quality ingredients do make a difference. And it's important to know where your food comes from. My favorite thing, yes, the food is amazing, but my favorite thing about Blue Apron is seeing how happy it makes Amy, because she forgets stuff at the grocery store. I forget stuff at the grocery store. We live in the mountains, so our grocery store is 20 minutes away. Loading up the baby, unloading the baby, you know, when it just comes in a box to your door, it's pretty awesome. It's very affordable, a lot of variety, get a lot of vitamins and minerals. You get minerals? It's flexible. You get to customize your meals. Like, for example, Amy doesn't eat pork, and that was one of the listed things that I said. So she'll say no pork. Each meal comes with step-by-step instructions. And this is the real deal. I'm only telling you all this stuff because I have an offer for you. You get three meals free. Well, how much is shipping? Free. If you go to blueapron.com/Owen, blueapron.com/Owen, there's no reason not to try it. Your family will love it. You'll love it. And it's free. And if you don't like it, bail. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. It's blueapron.com/Owen. Blue Apron is a better way to cook. And when you use my promo code, that supports our show and it keeps the lights on, because I'm no longer on a network. I am solely independent. I'm doing this on my own. And thanks for the Patreon support. Patreon.com/WDTL. You can always donate to the show. I give you more stuff. So it's not just like, I'm not just begging. You know, I'm too proud to beg, guys. So if you sign up for the Patreon, I will, when I come to your town, I'll give you free tickets to the show. I'll give you more stuff, more talks with my brother, talks with my mom, more personal stuff. It's a good time. All right, let's talk Why Didn't They Laugh? Let's get into today's episode. What did I want to talk about? I made some notes. I'm excited for the Super Bowl. I'm very excited for the Super Bowl. I really hope that Lady Gaga doesn't do political stuff, because I'm real sick of politics. Everyone's sick of politics. No one wants to hear what she has to say about politics. Comedy's taking a weird turn. It's weird. Every comedian I follow on Twitter that used to be super funny, they now only discuss politics nonstop, retweeting just congressmen, and just doesn't end. There's a place for that. There is. I'm not saying you can't be active or whatnot, but comedians are clowns. We're clowns. And our job is to make people laugh and smile. And people need that. And to show you how much people need that, I'm going to read a really nice email I got from a listener. Let me find it really fast. It was titled "The Role of Comedy." This was great. I loved reading this. "Hey Owen, I'm a social worker. And even when I was in college, the professors warned us that this dark, sick sense of humor came with the territory. A thought that I, at that time, was horrified at. Now that I've been in the field for a few years, I get it. I work with kids who have mental health disorders, so along with that comes trauma in all forms. So jokes about molestation, suicide, and abuse are daily occurrences in my office. It's not uncommon to come back to the office from a particularly tense or heavy meeting where specific details of these traumas are discussed and joked about in the circumstances with coworkers. Sometimes I even make note of potential jokes as the client is providing the details of whatever incident is being discussed that day. Writing it out here makes me feel horrible about it, but this use of humor is truly self-preservation. Like you discussed in the pod, I know that these events are life-changing and traumatic for the individual, and joking about it in no way takes away from that. But if I were to approach these situations with the seriousness and intensity that some might feel is necessary, I'd become burned out so quickly it would be impossible for me to do my job effectively. It's weird, because this humor slips into your personal life so easily, and it's hard for people who are not in this type of field to understand. I can distinctly remember being out to dinner with friends a few months ago, right after the whole Harambe thing went down. I don't know what that is. And laughing about the pandemonium that would have ensued if that gorilla would have started tearing that little boy limb from limb. Oh, I remember that. My friends looked at me horrified, and I quickly changed the subject. I guess this is just a long-winded way for me to say thanks for talking about it. It's often expected of people in human services fields to be very PC, and while professionally that may be true, personally, we are entitled to joke about whatever the fuck we want. Thanks." Isn't that great? And that's so true. I did that. She definitely wrote to me after listening to my episode with Brian Quinn from the Impractical Jokers, because he used to be a firefighter. And we talked a lot about how in those jobs, when you see like a burned baby or like someone died or just horrors, you have to joke about it or else you literally want to kill yourself. And so the reason I care, and my wife, it's so funny. She's like, "You're starting to slip back into your old obsessions." Because when I was in the United Kingdom with the Jokers, I actually became much happier. Like, my tweets were happier. My posts were happier. I missed my family a lot. Like, there was a misery to that. But, like, being in environments, England is less PC. It's less focused on race. It's less focused on gender. It's less focused on all this bullshit that America is focused on. And I felt so free. I felt so good. I felt like people actually joked. And even there, they say that they're strangled by the PC police. And in America, it's absolutely insane. And it is. It's insane. Because the problem is it doesn't give people a release. And the reason I care is because releases always come. And just like earthquakes, my wife has her master's degree in structural engineering. She used to be obsessed with earthquakes. And one thing about earthquakes, same with geysers, same with volcanoes, same with human nature, the longer they go without release, the more devastating it is. So when you put this stranglehold on a culture, something bad is coming. The good thing about my England trip is I realized I'm not obsessed with this stuff. Like, when it goes away, when my Twitter timeline isn't just politics, I'm so happy. But I have to address this, because what will happen is war. It's happened so many times, and I have so many friends and so many really close people that I love and are my family that are super left-wing progressive types. And my warning to those people is they don't have guns. So just, you got to think long term, whether it's in a month or 20 years, If this tension keeps building, there will be violence. Tension doesn't just go forever. There has to be a release. The volcano will pop. And so this obsession with, because what it is, this is what I found. And then I'll get off my soapbox and I will, because I know soapboxes aren't fun, but this is a self-preservation soapbox. This is a preservation of our world soapbox. This isn't me trying to tell you how to live. I'm explaining to you something that I've learned in my life. And there's a lot I don't know, but this, I do know this. Everything pops. I've known closet gay guys. They were closeted for years. And when they popped, everyone's dick got sucked. They were sucking and fucking. That's why, I don't know if you guys remember when there was a lot more homophobia in the world and a lot more oppression of gay people, and they were very marginalized. The gay culture was so promiscuous. It still is in a way, but nothing like it used to be. In the 80s, it was like bathhouses and shit, like 10, 15 dudes a day. I know this because my parents are professors and I was raised with, a lot of gay people. And then the more they're accepted and the more they're let into the communities and the more they're not hated, the more likely they are to have a long-term boyfriend. You know, they don't have to suck and fuck the entire world because they don't have that like weight on them. And it's the same with, and what I'm talking about isn't political. Don't think this is attacking or endorsing any politics. Politics are just a symptom of our culture. Nothing to do with politics, but you get what I'm saying. I don't have to keep going just because the people listening right now aren't even the people I'm talking about. So it's that's why I don't even discuss it anymore. Like, for example, I did a little research. This is just funny. If like Lady Gaga, for example, if she does a rant at the Super Bowl, like Beyonce did last year with her Black Panther dance. If she does that, just I did some math. This is the problem with it. This is why I did that episode about Dave Chappelle and how great he is. Because Dave Chappelle actually has the social clout and currency to criticize. That dude left $70 million on the table and went to Africa when he felt like shit wasn't right. And he still was kind. He still was liberal in a kind way. What was I talking about? But like the problem with a lot of celebrities talking all this moral high ground shit is they don't have any of that social currency to do that. Like, for example, Lady Gaga is worth $220 million. I did the math. The average Syrian makes $600 a year. So Lady Gaga could pay a year's salary to 370,000 Syrians. All right, Lady Gaga, her houses have 26,000 square feet, and that's in the most expensive places in the world. And most of the time, they're unoccupied, but even by her, and she's very small. 26,000 square feet. The average American has 900 square feet. So that is the issue. The issue isn't having a moral high ground. It's, do you have a moral high ground when you're already a stuffed pig? You're a fucking pig. Like Seth MacFarlane is constantly tweeting about politics and how they're always blaming poor people. These people are now blaming poor people. All you dumb rednecks, you idiots, you'll get what's coming to you. They're even inciting violence. He's worth like $1 billion. He literally could pay for all the Syrians. I love it. I kind of love it in a way. I think it's kind of hilarious. The balls it takes. Just the absolute balls. I wrote out a couple jokes that these are jokes being told to a progressive. This is how they respond. Okay. The first one is knock knock. Who's there? Home invasion statistics. Still find this joke format funny? Right, here's another one. How many Irishmen does it take to change a light bulb? My father was an Irish electrician who died changing a light bulb. Still funny? How many chickens, or why did the chicken cross the road? It's alarming how many chickens die every day just to cross the road to get to the other side. I don't see how anyone can laugh. The irony is our lives are so good. They're so good that we get to have these moral superior stances. The woman that sent me that email is a social worker. They make like 30 grand a year and they have to deal with the worst problems in the world. She needs comedy. Needs. So when one of these stuffed pigs worth $250 million sitting in their opulent mansion has no right to tell someone making $30,000 a year who is a social worker what they can and cannot laugh about. And until we figure that out, the tension will build until eventually there will be violence. There will be blood. And the left will lose so bad that it makes me scared for my friends and family. Like, I know the people that they've never even shot a gun. I mean, every ex-Marine I know is super into Trump, and they can kill a man at 2 kilometers. If this continues, it is not good. All right. That being said, I'm not going to touch on that anymore because people outside of America, although I will say this, England, people kept talking to me about Trump though by the end. They'd be like, so what do you think about Trump? I'm like, guys, fuck Trump. Like, who cares? Let him go. My brother's theme is it's over. Because he's a lumberjack and also a teacher. You know, he works for the state of New York. So he's not a fan of Trump. He thinks that Trump might take away his funding. So, and he has 2 daughters and I don't know. He can't stand the guy. But he never talks about him. And if you try to talk to my brother about Trump, he just goes, it's over. It's already over. And you're like, but did you see what he tweeted? It's over. It's over. And my brother's such a genius because he never really says what that means. He's just basically, he's like, it's over. And the more he says it, the more you like get a different meaning from it. Speaking of which, my brother and I are doing a show at Blue Seed Studios, right here in Saranac Lake. There's 3,000 total people in our town, so we need people to come. It's already almost sold out, but it's not big. It's not a big place. It's actually like an art. It's an art gallery run by the coolest woman ever. She's just so chill. And it's more like a party than anything. And so he's going to open up for me. And we're going to work on some stuff later today. One of the things we're going to do is read newspaper headlines from Saranac Lake versus the rest of the world. Like most headlines are like horrifying. You know, like 80 killed by a jihadist motorist or some shit. And in Saranac Lake, it's like, black bear spotted eating out of garbage. Neighbors confused. It's just, or like, winter carnival is here. Help us build our ice palace. If I wasn't an entertainer and I didn't have to promote stuff, I would never be on social media anymore. I see the numbers dropping. My followers went up recently because of that United Kingdom tour, but people are starting to just bail on it. And the thing is the progressives are all on there. So they all think everyone agrees with them. But most of the right just bailed. Like, they're like, we're not going to argue with you guys. You're always angry. You're always mad. You think you can change the world all the time. And here's the thing. Go on Pornhub or YouPorn or Xvideos or any of these porn sites. The human nature is fucking insane. I like to compare hits on videos. Like, I'll do a comedy video and I'll get like 2,000 or 3,000 views. And then you go on YouPorn and it's like stepmom teaches daughter's boyfriend how to suck and fuck. And it's like 150 million views. I believe in democracy, ladies and gentlemen, and every view is a vote. They're voting as to what we are. And if you go on these sites and look at the highest viewed videos, it's hilarious. And the more moral high ground an area has, they break it down by state. Fascinating stuff. Every state has a different top viewed porn category, top five. Say they've done it with countries too. And the more morally superior the country or state, the more fucked up the things that they watch at home are and that they jerk off to and rub their clits. So I always take it with a grain of sand, as they say, because I know behind these people's moral superiority, that's one of the appeals of Donald Trump, is he's an unapologetic pig. Someone said that he wasn't that rich. He said he's fucking rich. And in a world of duplicity, where everyone acts like they're somebody else, you know, you have one face in church and one face on the street and one face in the bedroom and one face at the bar. The internet is the new church. That's where everyone has their moral high ground, where they tweet. I've been unfollowing a lot of people because I don't like being in this world. I don't enjoy being agitated. And I unfollowed this one guy. This happened to me a few times because I think there's some program that tells people when they're unfollowed. And I'm unfollowing like friends of mine, like people that I would invite to dinner tomorrow. I still love these people. I just can't listen to them bitch anymore. And they're like, why did you unfollow me? Did I do something wrong? And I'm like, no, man, I just can't deal with it. I feel like I'm in a Greyhound bus station just surrounded by just crazy people. It's doing something to my brain. I can't deal with the politics. And he's like, you know what? I'm sick of it too. And I'm like, buddy, your last 10 tweets are jokeless political rants. He's like, yeah, I know. Like, even the people doing it don't want to do it. It's just that's what's getting the retweets. That's what's getting the attention. And as a provocateur, like my job my whole life has been provocateur. It's so funny because like sometimes people will write back to me, like I'll say something, they're like, excuse me, how dare you, all that bullshit. And I'm like, I'm a comedian. And they're like, what does that have to do with anything? Comedians are supposed to talk the shit and be funny. But back in the day, people weren't very provocative. Most people just lived their life, followed the rules, went to church, died, you know, got married. That's it. And so the comedian's job was to kind of do what they're doing now, where it's like you poke at people. You say like, oh, have you thought of this? But you hide it with comedy, but you poke. Now we live in a world where everyone's poking. So a provocateur merely means, well, I don't know. I guess technically it means to provoke, someone who provokes, someone who says provocative things. But in my view, the new provocative is not to be provocative. That's why on stage I never talk politics. I don't do any of that shit. Online, I try to stay away from it as much as possible. I think at this point, to be provocative is to give people a release of provocativeness. I'm going to self-produce my next hour special. I've realized that because I have like 3 hours of material. And this is the thing. I need you guys to help me out. As listeners to this show, this is like my 130-something episode. I've done so much material that I've never done on TV or anything. And living out here, I just don't really think I'm doing much more on TV as far as stand-up. So I need you to email me the jokes that you want me to do. Like I've done literally thousands of them at this point on this podcast. So, and I've forgotten so many of them. So email me at whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com and tell me what jokes you want me to do. Because I'm going to do 3 different hours. One's going to be called Did I Do Good? And that's mostly relationship material and family material. I'm going to do one called Full Bellies, Empty Balls. That's going to be more human nature stuff, more cognitive, you know, the duck stuff and war stuff and all that. And then I'm going to do one called Feel My Heat, which is more good times. Because I want to give people what they want. And people seem to want different things from me. Some people just want male-female stuff. Some people want me to push the edge of human nature, like really analyze what people are. And some people just want to sing Feel My Heat at the top of their lungs. And I can break up my jokes into those 3 categories. And I'm going to rent my own theater. I'm going to hire some people. I hosted the Art Director Awards for the last 3 years. This year, Patton Oswalt's going to do it. And he's going to do a fantastic job. I really like that guy. So I have like some pretty deep connections with art directors. So I'm going to get a couple of these dudes to help me out and make a really beautiful backdrop for each one. I'm going to do three different ones. And then I'm going to release it on my website and on iTunes and on Pandora and all that shit. Because I got to get these jokes out. It's crazy. All right, so I'm going to now at this point. Oh, and I got to plug some more dates. Sacramento Punchline and the Hollywood Improv I'm doing next week. And then I'm closing out the month at Dr. Grin's in Grand Rapids. I love all of those places. So you can get tickets at hugepianist.com. And then in March, I'm doing Vancouver, Yuck Yucks. And I got another two spots that I just can't think of. But whatever. I'm going to read you guys a little bit of the book I'm working on right now. This is in a chapter called Weapons of Mass Distraction. And all right, and I want your feedback because this is a work in progress. But my deadline's coming up and I got to really get going. If my phone hadn't died, I never would have met my wife. According to her, she had walked past me before the morning we met and had tried to get my attention. Unfortunately, my eyes were locked on the shiny screen in my hand as I navigated the Los Angeles sidewalk using only my peripheral vision. They say the closest relative to the human is the chimpanzee. I think it's the moth. Maybe physically it's the chimpanzee, but we can't stop being pulled toward electric light even if we know it's to our demise. I can't imagine what I was so interested in that morning. I walked past my future wife and the mother of my children. Was I scrolling through the people who liked my recent Facebook post? Was I wondering why there were so few likes on my most recent Facebook post that I could not even scroll them? Did some celebrity do something overly weird or overly human? In retrospect, the inconsequence of whatever had my attention when compared to Amy could only be described by Carl Sagan. He was the dude who said there are more stars in the universe than all the grains of sand in the beaches on Earth. That dude was good at describing things hard to wrap your head around. Fortunately for me, my phone did die that morning. With a massive hangover, I walked my dog Benny on the palm tree lined street I was renting an apartment on. It was my birthday, and living five blocks from the Hollywood Improv where I frequently performed, that meant I was very hungover. The first thing I saw was her dog. Dogs have a way of cutting through the BS. They just walk up to another dog, or groups of dogs, and say, "Would any of you gentlemen like to smell my penis?" Then the other dog or dogs would lean in, like he or she was smelling a glass of fine wine. Dogs smell each other the way humans read the about section on someone's Facebook or Instagram. In the eyes of a dog, I can see they are learning, processing, understanding the dog they are smelling. After a thorough reading of a new dog's backside, a dog will lift its head and look at their new associate with eyes that say, "I'll give you the birch tree and the no parking sign. But if you think you're claiming the corner of that mailbox, we're going to have an issue." Luckily for me, our dogs worked out their about me sections of their genitals with civility, so my eyes were free to move up to her owner. I'll never forget her smile. It's the same smile I see every day now, in her and our son's face. I would do it no justice describing it, so just trust me. It's incredible. Amy was drinking a beer, a Red Stripe, as she walked Honey the dog. She was wearing short Daisy Dukes and had a flower hairband. I don't remember who said what to who to get the conversation going, but we ended up standing on the corner of our street for almost an hour talking. She was my neighbor, lived two blocks down. I've had a draw to certain people before. I've experienced that pull towards another human being. Maybe someone's skin or the curve of their hip, a joke they told or a thing they said, but never one like this. She was getting her master's degree at USC in engineering and she liked raves. She was drinking a beer by herself on the street during the day, but had gotten her dog from the shelter she volunteered at every Sunday. When no one else wanted the sweet but easily startled dog, she took her and treated her like family. She asked for my number, since my phone was dead, but still had a shyness about her. She glowed bright, but had a faint melancholy. I could tell she was in control, planned, moved with intention. went after what she wanted. Yet, I could feel she was slightly uncomfortable in her own skin. That's why she liked raves, to be surrounded by people, yet completely alone. She was a walking contradiction in the most natural and beautiful way. Qualities that shouldn't fit together in the same person did with her, with elegance and honesty. I loved her. It was a form of love at first sight. That being said, this is not one of those romances where from the moment on we were Prince Charming and Princess Charming. Very far from that, actually. We were more Prince and Princess Alarming. We had so much upheaval and insanity the first few years of our relationship that I cannot believe we made it. We had love at first sight, but neither of us were ready for it, capable of it, or possessed the skills to have a positive or constructive relationship. We were fucked. Laughter and attraction is what kept us together through times that any sane person would have walked away from the relationship and never looked back. Last night I was making her laugh by replacing the letter R with the letter W in words as I spoke an octave higher than normal. "Excuse me, can I try playing with your twain set? Your eyes put me in a trance. Would you like to try a cookie? Some chocolate?" For some reason she thought it was hilarious and kept making me do it. Later in the night, we rubbed oil on each other in the sauna after Walter went to sleep and had a ridiculously hot makeout session. Laughter and attraction these days can still mend arguments or miscommunications, but it doesn't function as the life raft it once did. We're good now, but we weren't always. There have been times when we've been in such dark places with tears in our eyes, we've begged the other person to somehow make it funny. Please make it funny. Please. And we would try as best we could. We once had sex behind an abandoned building after I had to pull over because she was kicking the shit out of my car and I was calling her a crazy bitch. Those were bad times, but laughing and attraction kept us afloat. For most of the world, life these days is one of those wonderful contradictions. It's never been easier to acquire knowledge, meet people, express your opinion. Yet for some reason, people still feel a sense of isolation, loneliness, and distrust of the information they are bombarded with. With the world literally at our fingertips, just like the moth, we seem to march blindly into the blinding light of our devices. Even though we know it's bad for us, we disappear for hours in a malaise of approval and insecurity. I'm not judging. I'm a moth too. Amy calls it refresh mode. When I fall into the trance of my pocket prison, it usually comes when I first come back from the road and I'm exhausted. I'll just stare at my phone, refreshing my email, then refreshing my Twitter, then refreshing my Instagram. Then I check the weather, then look at Amazon for stuff I don't need, and then I repeat. Nothing good ever comes from it. I'll end up arguing with someone about nothing on Twitter. Want to go to some crazy place in the Mediterranean we can't afford from Instagram. And then I'll buy an exercise bike on Amazon that doesn't fit my 6'7" frame, and I end up putting it in the shed. I fall in between two worlds. I'm old enough to know it's bad and I should get back to making eye contact with my family, but I'm young enough where I still do it. Being born in 1980 makes me a dual citizen of the two worlds most people reside in. There are people who remember a time before the internet and there are people who don't. I was young enough when the World Wide Web for catching moths came out to understand and to use it. I can plunge into this cyber reality of Instagram stories and Reddit rabbit holes. I'm young enough to not call my computer the Google machine and be on first name basis with a support technician in India. I'm also old enough where I was mentally formed in an era where you had to, where you made a plan to meet someone somewhere. And if you didn't find each other, the plan failed. When someone said, "Meet me at the mall at 1:00, after that phone went click, that's all you had. You were off the grid. The other person had to be there. You had to be there. And there was no way of communicating to the other person once you left your home. Nowadays, people send each other 8 texts, a screenshot, and FaceTime, only to realize they're 8 feet away from the kiosk their friend is standing besides. I was formed in a time before caller ID, when the ring of a telephone could have been anyone in the world, and you had to answer it. You couldn't screen calls. You picked it up with a lot of hope. Hello? Who could it be? You would answer dreaming of the infinite possibilities that existed right up until the other person spoke. If someone didn't answer their phone, You called over and over again until they did. If you went through a breakup, you couldn't stalk them online. You had to actually stalk them. It was a much creepier time to be alive in that aspect. It was not uncommon to see someone who had a crush on you or someone who didn't like you walk past your house 4 or 5 times in an evening. Actually walk past your house. The world before the internet seemed much safer when in reality it was much more dangerous. All major crime stats were way higher in the 1980s, and we were in a very hostile Cold War with Russia. Cigarettes being bad for you is still heavily debated, and back seats rarely had seat belts. Oddly, however, no one acted panicked. People seemed to just listen to Duran Duran, do weird stuff with their hair, and wear bizarrely fitting jeans. Information transferred very slowly. People didn't know about all the horrible things that happened every day because information was spread through a 30-minute news program that was mostly weather and cute kittens. Maybe you'd see the face of an abducted child on a milk carton, have a weird conversation in the breakfast table, but in general, people didn't really know about anything. We were dumb. Lying was super easy back then. If you were at a party, you could say anything to anyone. And unless they had an encyclopedia in their backpack, there's no way to know if that person was lying. You had to trust your gut and look at their neck. You can always see lies in the neck. Now that we have the internet, you don't have to look at their eyes or neck. You look at your phone and Google what the person said. Within 8 seconds, you know his grandfather did not invent the harmonica, and it is not illegal in France to not have a twirly mustache. Pornography was much different before the internet. Now every single conceivable thing anyone could possibly want to see is in its own category of almost infinite amount of clips. Carl Sagan may have to come up with a quote to describe all the pornography that currently exists in the world. It depresses me sometimes to see that a porn clip, horny MILF-oiled boobs with horrible production quality, has 100 million hits, and the stand-up clip I put up a month ago that I worked on for a year has 5,000. But I get it. I'm just not willing to oil my boobs. Okay, fine. I'll oil my boobs. But I know no one wants to see them, so I'll keep pretending like it's my choice to not oil my boobs. Before the internet, pornography was a crumpled page of an old Playboy in the woods hidden under some leaves that had to be handed down from generation to generation. In my town, there was one such picture at the top of a small hill in the woods, everyone referred to as Spank Mountain. Looking back, there's a decent chance it wasn't even a picture of a naked woman at all. But just like one of those inkblot tests, we saw in that old crumpled page what we wanted to see in it. I'm not trying to sound like a curmudgeon. I'm not one of those back in my day people, because I'm not giving judgment. This is just a fact. I have no idea what is better or worse, or even if those concepts exist outside of someone's personal experience. All I know is Gutenberg's printing press had less influence on society than a new app does today. Yeah, books went from being handwritten to being printed in mass quantities, but Yelp lets everyone in the world have the power to ruin the business of someone you went to middle school with that you did not like very much. When I was a kid, my mother would read to me Grimm's fairy tales. They were truly horrifying, and I still don't understand how that was considered childhood pre-sleep material. But one thing we had was the disconnection from monsters. The moral of the story was easily digested because there was no wolf that was going to eat me. It was a metaphor. But story's end, I'd be wide-eyed in terror and say, "Mom, is the big bad wolf going to eat me?" My mom, with her kind eyes, would say, "No, Owen, there's no big bad wolf in Oswego, New York. It's a story about not going too far off the path." Things have changed now that sex offenders have had to start registering online, and the knowledge is readily available for everyone. Now that people can look online and see that their nice little neighborhood is littered with the scum of the earth, I wonder how many parents have to break it to their kids that, yes, the big bad wolf is around the corner, and his name is Donald, and he's always wearing sweatpants. When I met Amy, she had recently made a Match.com profile and had some bad dates. I know people that are in amazing marriages that met on dating websites, so they are doing great things for a lot of great people. But some don't seem to find the special someone unless, of course, their idea of a special someone is a man that is 30 years older than his profile picture and keeps asking if you shave down there. I have no idea the ins and outs of dating apps, so I've just had to ask friends about them. Ranging from the highly specific J-Date to the highly non-specific Tinder, or the even more non-specific Grindr, my friends have described to me a wide range of experiences. Some of them fun, and approach them without a lot of expectation. Some rave about them and show me pictures of children from the marriage they got out of the experience. A surprisingly large amount, however, tell me about feeling tricked, feeling unsatisfied, or feeling almost disconnected from reality as they swipe past faces with such speed and judgment they physically get a sore thumb. I call it Tinder thumb. I would have never met Amy if I was on a dating app, or on paper we don't line up. We aren't compatible. We wouldn't have been paired. But in reality, I know we are meant for each other on a level that I didn't think existed. Algorithms are very useful on a scientific level, but once they hit the marketplace, I just don't trust them. 4 out of 5 dentists have never agreed on anything. I know dentists. They're not always the most agreeable people, and they never discuss the best toothpaste brand. When they aren't shooting lions, they typically binge drink at the Hollywood Improv asking me if I know any dentist jokes. I usually say, I have a dentist joke. Why didn't the dentist kill himself? And the dentist smiles and says, why? And I say, I have no idea. That actually gets a decent laugh because dentistry is the highest rate of suicide of any profession. Not a joke I'd say on stage because it's both startling and highly specific. But one-on-one with a wasted dentist, it gets a solid laugh and a free tooth cleaning. The dentists I've hung with are good guys. 4 out of 5 dentists don't agree, though. Those commercials are lies. I'm a massive fan of science. I do a physics podcast where I've talked with Nobel Prize winners, NASA engineers, Bill Nye, the science guy, and I love what science has and will do for our world. Actual scientists and a handful of industrialists are either reliable or they can course correct when they aren't. I don't always buy the science in commercials. They have an agenda which makes them biased, which makes them non-scientific. It's very ironic. Every time a dating site says that they have the most successful marriages in the world, I think to myself, what about the other site that just said the same thing? Or, of course, what about starting a conversation with your neighbor when your phone is off and your dog just smelled another dog's private parts? I'd like to see your data. My mom is a children's literature professor, so I was raised with a lot of children's stories. One of my favorites was The Missing Piece. There was this circle with, you guessed it, a missing piece. It looked like a pie with a piece missing. And the circle rolled around and around looking for its missing piece. And every piece was either too big or too small, so it would continue rolling along. As it would slowly roll through the meadow, incomplete circles don't roll very fast, it would talk to the butterflies and the trees and its other friends. I may be messing up some of the crucial plot points, but I think it was butterflies and trees and other friends. So then one day, spoiler alert, it finds its missing piece. The piece fits perfectly. So the circle starts rolling perfectly. At first, the piece is overjoyed, but then it gains speed and rolls past all its friends. At the end of the story, it leaves its missing piece behind because it realizes it was happy or flawed. Why did I just summarize a book that is possibly shorter than the summary? Because Amy and I are not a perfect match. We argue, and we don't always understand each other, and we are very different. But friction causes growth in plants, muscle fibers, and relationships. One of the things our world seems to be missing is the allowance for tension, friction, and the growth that comes from it. I don't want to go back to the era of my childhood. The accomplishments we have made with human rights, medicine, and the availability of information is incredible, and I am proud to be alive right now. A side effect to an explosion in efficiency, communication, and a reliance on algorithms to run our life is it doesn't allow us to make the mistakes that give us character and shows us love. There's a great scene in the Netflix series House of Cards where this math genius had compiled all of the metadata that was giving candidates a massive advantage. Algorithms would show politicians exactly who and where to campaign and what to say and what to dress and how many times to blink. These things do work, by the way, and are used all the time. But the scene that stuck with me was when he was at a jazz club talking to someone and said, "But big data can never predict the first time someone heard jazz." That is what I feel is missing in our quest for the algorithm of love. Part of love is jazz. Part of love is a mistake. And out of that comes passion and growth. People can find jazz in other people on dating sites, and they do all the time. I'm sure they are incredibly helpful for people to meet someone in this connected world that seems to create smaller and smaller social groups. I just think that it's good to look up from our phone sometimes. Trust me, one time I literally stepped on someone taking a nap. It was legitimately insane for both of us. Flaws are good. Ted Turner, Henry Ford, Steve Jobs, Tommy Hilfiger, Richard Branson, the founder of HP, the founder of IKEA, Charles Schwab, many other titans of industry are all dyslexic. Bill Gates and the founder of BitTorrent, as well as most physicists and comedians that I know, have Asperger syndrome. I have a few friends that are leading male romantic leads in movies that millions of adoring female fans would be heartbroken to learn are insanely gay in real life. Dyslexia on paper would never be associated with the most successful people on earth. Different cultures approach learning disabilities different, however. Some use extremely sensitive terms. Others use terms many feel are insensitive. Regardless, very few people would associate a person who can't spell frog with reshaping the face of corporate finance. I'm an auditory learner, and until I really understood that, I thought I was stupid. I couldn't remember any of the rules of spelling, words, and I didn't understand why a comma existed or why one sentence should be indented over another. I didn't understand any of it. I should have reminded myself that I could play Bach by ear, and whenever someone talked, I remembered almost everything they said for years. If I took a spelling or grammar test, I would have been considered very subpar, bordering on challenged. Multiple choice, giving speeches, or remembering the facts and concepts of long lectures, I was not challenged. Flaws are good. I'm a professional public speaker and a musician. My job is to listen to huge numbers of people, tell me about their life, and I slowly mold their emotions into short and effective jokes. That is a job very few people would pursue or want, and there is no class for it. My flaw made me very good at something very weird. I've acted in TV shows and movies. I have podcasts. I'm a writer. But it's very nebulous. Amy and I were getting passports the other day, and I had to ask her, "What do I do? What do I put for occupation? What the hell do I do?" She smiled and said, "Entertainer." I trusted her and wrote it very slowly in the little box, making sure I spelled it correctly. CEOs and visionaries have a very similar road, I imagine. When the current establishment doesn't understand that your inability to spell frog has nothing to do with your brain power, you start your own establishment. I wonder what Steve Jobs would have written in the occupation box in the early 80s. "I sell boxes with my friend Waz that help people get free cable. I worked at an apple farm and loved it, and I'm obsessed with beautiful form as well as the lowercase I." My gay leading man friends, when they were in the closet, developed an incredible ability at pretending to be straight. They act straighter than straight guys are. And Asperger syndrome sounds horrifying until you have the ability to construct your own world out of patterns and numbers. Then you can buy an island. Flaws are good. My father became a public speech professor because of his desire to overcome his stutter. My mother was the first person to go to college from her hometown because she felt an outsider because she was 6 feet tall and opinionated. People can flourish because of their flaws and not in spite of them. It's hard to know who the one is, when to settle down, and how to make it work. We are living in a world of constant distractions as well as a data flood that makes our ancient instincts short-circuit with fight or flight responses. Somehow, Amy and I made it through this maze of distraction. How? Let's start from the beginning. So that's the first, that's the rough of my first chapter. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. That's going to be it for me. BlueApron.com/Owen, hook a brother up. HugePianist.com for touring dates. And share this podcast with people you love because I really enjoy doing it. And I enjoy hearing from you. Why didn't they laugh at gmail.com? Much, 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 much love.